Mary Sutherland again, with BUFO Paranormal and UFO Radio. Tonight we have a special treat for you, William Kennedy. He wrote a book called Lucifer's Lodge. And let me I'll just read a little bit of an introduction to that. The current priest sex scandal in the Roman Catholic Church has sent shockwaves throughout the world. However, mainstream media outlets hardly touched upon the fact that many of the accused priests were involved in satanic ritual abuse as part and parcel of their sexual abuse of children and women. Lucifer's Lodge covers the sick careers of several abusive priests who employed devil worship and arcane rites as far as their sexual abuse. Case studies include Father St. Fortune of Ireland, who raped children in a haunted house and threatened detractors with magical hexes. Father Frederick Ryan, who tattooed a boy with a devil figure and then raped him. Father Bernard Lane, who sexually abused homeless boys in a ritual chamber called the Black Room. These are all things that we're going to be discussing tonight with William Kennedy. And William's here tonight and with us right now. And I'd like to say hello, William.
Well, thank you for having me on, Mary.
Thank you very much for having the courage it takes to get this type of information out. People that know me realize that I have been staying on this as much as possible because it is, so I think that we owe something to our children, not to be, have them to be used like, what would you say, as an object for somebody else.
Sure.
You know, they're precious, and we have to protect them. And what's so sad, as far as I'm concerned, is the people that we have trusted the most are the ones that are hurting our children the worst.
That's very, very true, Mary. The book Lucifer's Lodge, it's available at williamhkennedy.com, and it's $21.95 plus shipping. How this book came to be written was in 1996, I met with Father Malachi Martin, sometimes pronounced Malachi Martin, in New York. I met him through a mutual friend named Dr. Ramakumara Swami. And I went down to New York to see Father Martin in order to get some biographical information about him for a book I was writing. And he said something quite stunning when I was down there. He told me that Cardinal Bernard Law of Boston, I'm from Massachusetts myself, was involved in a pedophile ring. He was actually running a pedophile ring, and that some of these pedophile priests in his ring were practicing Satanists. Now, back in 1996, I thought that was a very, you know, stunning and absurd thing to say.
And so apparently Malachi already knew about it. And from what I understand, Malachi is pretty much one of the right-hand men, or the right, almost like a right-hand arm of the Pope, right?
He was at one time in the early 1960s. He was a high-level Vatican advisor during the Second Vatican Council. He worked with a Jesuit cardinal named Auguste Bea, and he was a close friend of Pope Paul VI and Pope John Paul II, who we know now. So, he did have very extensive inside information about the priest-pedophile satanic ring in the church. And what he wanted me to do back in 1996 was come back to Massachusetts and see if I could find out anything about it. He had been receiving letters from victims from Massachusetts, and he had heard all sorts of rumors from some of his Vatican sources.
Now, was he working under the orders of the church when he did his investigation?
He was... Malachi Martin had an interesting status in the church. Pope Paul VI released him from all of his vows from the Jesuit order except for celibacy, and he was more or less a freelance priest in full standing in the church, but he wasn't subordinate to a bishop or a cardinal in the United States. He had a superior in Rome who he reported to twice a year.
And so he was, so I just wanted to clarify it, so he was doing this pretty much, this investigation pretty much on his own, independently.
Yes, he was. He wrote a fictionalized version of it called Windswept House, which he just changed the names of the major players in the priest pedophile ring and put that out as a novel in 1996.
But that actually was a true story.
It was a true story. He told me that he changed the names in it in order to save his kneecaps, is the way he put it. He says so they'd send someone to get him if he actually used real names.
Now, listeners, you can follow up with us on this website. I'm sorry, too, but I wanted to bring this up so that the listeners can, I like to have them pull up our website or your
sure.
website as they're listening to us.
Sure.
And that will be at www.WilliamHKennedy, KENNEDY.com. Okay.
Just to continue, I came back up to Massachusetts in 1996, and I couldn't find any sign of a satanic ring of pedophile priests in the Archdiocese of Boston where I live. Now, to fast forward a bit, Father Malachy Martin died in 1999 of natural causes. He had coronary disease. And I didn't think too much about what he said about the satanic pedophile ring until January of 2002, when the Boston Globe broke the story that Cardinal Law, Bernard Law of Boston, was in fact running a pedophile ring.
And now he's, didn't the Pope just turn around and call him back to Rome to give
yeah,
him a very good, high position
oh,
with
yes,
the Church?
Oh, yes, yes. That's what's fascinating is he had to resign as Archbishop of Boston about a year after the story broke, because if he stayed here, there were mob scenes outside the cathedral when he was saying Mass.
Yeah.
And it was a bit crazy. I'm kind of glad he left, because someone would have probably murdered him.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, what's quite frightening, as you say, is for his complicity in the pedophile ring, he was given a promotion. He was given a ceremonial position in Rome. And for any bishop or cardinal to get a ceremonial position at the Vatican is considered a great honor. So he was rewarded for running this priest pedophile ring. He wasn't punished or sanctioned by the Church. He was given a promotion. It's quite interesting. After January 2002, I just kind of sat back and just monitored the newspapers for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And as the story started coming in, which not only talked about pedophilia, but also talked about ritual abuse as part of this sexual abuse of women and children. And the first case that came up in the Boston Globe was Father Monsignor Frederick Ryan, who was the Vice Chancellor of the Archdiocese of Boston, who in the early 80s, he tattooed a boy with a devil figure and took him down to Providence, Rhode Island, and sexually abused him. You know, he crossed state lines. That's a violation of the Mann Act. This was an underage boy. And a tattoo or a mark like that is called the devil's mark. And that is used by certain Luciferian and satanic groups in initiation ceremonies. Now, this wasn't some fringe priest in the Boston Archdiocese. This was a vice chancellor of the Archdiocese who was, like, you know, third in charge of the whole area. So it goes to the highest levels within the Roman Catholic Church. As I looked into it after the story about Ryan...
Well, you could almost assume that it probably goes all the way to the Pope.
Well, yeah, it goes... It certainly, in the case of
it
Father...
It includes the Pope.
I don't see how the current Pope could not have known of the extent of the pedophile ring, quite frankly, because the Catholic Church did a secret study in the mid-90s, and they did an assessment of what was going on sexually in the Catholic Church, not as a means to prevent it, but as a means to, you know, get good legal strategies to protect themselves. So the highest echelons of the Catholic Church were involved in this priest pedophile ring. You know, the oldest symbol of the Christian Church is a fish, and a fish rots from the head down. That's the way I like to express
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
It's a top-level problem. Now, the other big case that came to my attention was one that you mentioned, the case of Father Sean Fortune in Ireland. And he is the most incontrovertible case of a satanic pedophile in this whole church debacle. Now, what Father Fortune did was he was stationed in Wexford, Ireland, which is a county in Ireland, and he sexually abused young boys, you know, the children of his parishioners in the early 80s. And what he would do is when these the parents found out about it, he would threaten them with magical hexes. For example, he would say that, you know, if you turn me into the police, Satan will haunt you. If you turn me into the police, your next child will be born cripple. And these villagers, they were sort of like hillbillies. They were very rural Irish people. And they took it to heart and were quite frightened of Father Fortune and were afraid to turn him in.
Well, you know, the thing is, he probably believed it himself that he could do that. Otherwise, he wouldn't be practicing it.
Oh, sure. Well, what's even more shocking is that one of his detractors who was trying to get him removed because he was raping children was walking through a field, and a friend of hers was struck by lightning.
Yeah.
And she ran over to help her friend, and she herself was struck by lightning. And both of these women survived, and what Father Sean Fortune's comment was, he said that they didn't get half enough, implying that he had caused these lightning bolts to hit these women.
Uh-huh.
And there again, no matter how you want to take it, whether he is able to do it magically or he was just taking advantage of a particular situation, that really doesn't matter. As far as the villages were concerned in Wexford, he did cause those lightning bolts to hit those people.
And how many times have you ever heard of lightning hitting more than once in the same place?
Well, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. It's very rare for two people to get struck on the same field.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at it statistically, in any case, the villagers really believed it. No matter how we analyze it now, it was a fact for them. Now, what Father Fortune also did, which is here it gets really bizarre, if that's not bizarre enough, is he took children to a convent called Loftus Hall. Now, Loftus Hall was built in 1666, and it had a history of poltergeist activities. A Catholic priest was sent there in the 1770s to exorcise the building and cast out the ghosts and demons that were harassing the people who lived there. The Catholic Church bought Loftus Hall in the 1930s and turned it into a convent. Now, Fortune used to take young boys there, preteen boys, and he would have orgies at Loftus Hall. And Loftus Hall had a room called the Devil's Room, which was some sort of ritual chamber. There hasn't been too much facts that have come out on it. This was reported by Alison O'Connor, an Irish Times journalist, in a book called A Message from Heaven. And so Fortune ritually abused boys at Loftus Hall in a ritual chamber called the Devil's Room. Now, as a Roman Catholic myself, you know, I can't be accused of Catholic bashing, but I don't know why a Catholic convent would have anything called the Devil's Room.
Well, I want to take it back to the 1700s. Now, you said that they went there to exorcise it.
Yes.
But they must have found something there, you know, that they liked because they bought it.
Eventually they did. Now the priest who cast out the ghost in the house, this was in the 1770s, his name was Father Thomas Broders, and right on his gravestone it says, "Here lies the body of Thomas Broders, who did good and prayed for all and banished the devil from Loftus Hall." Now there must have been something very satanic about that site back then.
Uh-huh.
There again, it was built in 1666, and bizarrely enough, when Father Fortune was finally brought to justice, he was charged with 66 counts of child rape. So you get this 666 throughout this whole case of Fortune. What happened to Father Fortune is eventually the villagers went to the media, and he was exposed in the media, and he committed suicide in 1999 rather than go to prison. And his superior, Bishop Brendan Kominski, who is the Bishop of Wexford, much like Bernard Law, he was forced to resign in 2002 after the BBC did a documentary on Father Sean Fortune. And like Cardinal Law, Bishop Kominski was given a high-level position in Rome after he got caught protecting, Father Sean Fortune, who was just a pure child rapist. This policy of promoting bishops within the Catholic Church who get caught in these things make it seem more and more conspiratorial. And once they are in Vatican City is actually an independent nation. They cannot be extradited or tried for any crime. So it's kind of a safe zone legally for them. And they live quite well there. You know, they live in palaces. Kaminsky and Bernard Law live in Vatican palaces. So they were rewarded with a palace for their protection of satanic rapist priests, which is quite shocking as a Catholic myself.
Wow. Okay, so why are they rewarded?
Well, that's one thing Father Malachy told me when I talked to him, Father Malachy Martin, is that the Vatican since the 1950s and 60s has been infiltrated by these pedophile Satanist priests. The example I can give you is, you know, take here in Massachusetts, Cardinal Bernard Law had to resign for protecting pedophile priests, and Bishop Dupre, who was the Bishop of Springfield, Massachusetts, he had to resign because he himself was a child pedophile. He was a bishop of the Church of Rome, and two people came forward with a story that he had raped them when they were children, and his only response was he resigned from office. He didn't dispute the claims. He was guilty. So the highest level of the Roman Catholic Church has been infiltrated with this Satanist pedophile cult.
But, you know, you can actually take that much further back than that, because look at the horror stories of the Inquisition.
Well, sure. I mean, that's you know.
I mean, that's not. I mean, we're not only are we involved with pedophile actions there, but I mean, there was torture. I mean, so you know, I've heard some of the stories. You know what they put those women through. You know, that is just totally unbelievable. And that had to be a very. I mean, that and then the and there was occult practices being done then, black magic, satanistic worship.
Well, sure,
you know,
that's
in the church.
That's one thing in my book. I actually trace the history of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church from the apostolic age, the time of the 12 apostles, up till 1992. So you're right. I mean, the church, historically speaking, has done even worse things than the Inquisition. In the Inquisition, you at least had a chance to defend yourself, whereas the church actually owned bordellos.
Yeah.
In Italy and France. And in Avignon, France, there was a bizarre thing in the Middle Ages. The prostitutes were forced to attend the daily masses. The bordello in Avignon was run by the church, and the mistress of the bordello was a Catholic nun who forced the women not only to service men, but in between servicing men, they had to go to Mass.
So now, and isn't that, I hate to say it, but isn't that practice yet today?
I mean, there are things certainly cognates to that that we see.
I've heard the stories about the nuns being used by the priest service.
Oh, right. I mean, one thing I bring out in my book is that the sexual abuse of women in the Catholic Church is far worse than the sexual abuse of children. It's a much wide-ranging problem. And there's also ritual elements to that, too. And the case in point I can give you is the case of Father Robert Methen, who was a Catholic priest here in the Boston Archdiocese. And here's a real bizarre story for you. He recruited girls in the early 1960s to become nuns. And back in those days, women were recruited to become nuns when they were about 12 or 13 years old. And they would be sent to a special high school where they'd begin their training as a nun. And what Robert Methen would do is he would target 13 and 14-year-old girls who were from alcoholic and dysfunctional homes. And he would befriend them, and he would encourage them to become nuns and enroll them in this high school in Kingston, Massachusetts. Now, once they were enrolled, he would initiate them into a very bizarre cult wherein Father Robert Methen told them that he himself was Jesus Christ and that to progress spiritually, they had to have sex with him. Now, this sounds an awful lot like Aleister Crowley's sex magic. You know, he would sexually abuse these girls and tell them that there were spiritual stages connected to having sexual relations with him because he told them that they were the risen Christ. Now, that sounds a bit absurd to us, like, why would these girls follow him? But you have to remember that these were very vulnerable young teenage girls who were from broken homes. And people from broken homes tend to be able, they're from youth, they're taught to cover up for the bad things their parents and adults do. Like in an alcoholic home, they'll say, the father will say, don't tell mommy I was drinking while she went out to the store. So they're very good at keeping secrets and being secretive about what adults do.
And we were talking 12, 13-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, you know, young girls who, you know, Meffin would come along, he'd be like a knight on a white steed, and he'd take them away from their abusive home. And it was sort of like the Stockholm Syndrome. They became, you know, enamored with him. And this cult that he ran went on for many, many years in the Archdiocese of Boston. And the person who was in charge of supervising Robert Meffin was none other than Monsignor Frederick Ryan, who tattooed the boy with the devil figure and molested him. Now, what I call what Robert Meffin did, that's a form of Luciferian occultism, in that what he was doing is he was recapitulating or reenacting Satan's attempt to overthrow heaven, which you can read about in Isaiah chapter 14. He was having these girls worship him as Jesus Christ in these sex ceremonies. So he was really breaking the first commandment. He was putting a false god between what we Catholics consider the true God. So that's where the Luciferian element comes into it. Now, there was another Catholic priest up here in Boston who did a similar thing, named James Foley. Now, Father James Foley was stationed in Salem, Massachusetts. And what he did was he had a woman who had a lobotomy who he used to have worship him as Jesus Christ. He claimed to be Jesus Christ, too. And he had had several children with this lobotomized woman and was complicit in her drug overdose death, which he was never charged with. But what happened to James Foley is he kind of lost his marbles or his discretion. He started to claim to be Jesus Christ from his pulpit during Mass. And after Mass, outside the church, he would tell people that he was, you know, the Savior of Salem and the Lord of Hosts. And the parishioners began to complain to the archdiocese, who actually did nothing about it. They just let him remain there. Now, when things came to a head is one night the police pulled over Father James Foley in Salem for running red lights. And what he told them was that he was the Savior and that the red lights were for other people. And that, you know, he thought he could transcend the laws of physics, that, you know, nothing could harm him. So running red lights were perfectly all right in his worldview, as sick as it was. Now, what happened to Father James Foley? He was eventually exposed by the New England Cable News Network, and what came out there is then again, Cardinal Bernard Law of Boston protected him, you know, as much as he could. He let him stay as pastor of the church in Salem, even though he was claiming to be Jesus Christ, which by Catholic theology is probably the worst thing you can say. To claim to be Christ himself.
But it seems to be a double standard, such as it's like they practice one thing, they teach one thing, but they practice just the opposite of what they're teaching.
Well, that's a big theme in the book, Mary. It's the concept of inversion. Okay, what they're doing is they're taking Catholic theology, which in many ways has some, you know, good teachings in it, and they're perverting it. They're overturning it. They're putting it upside down and keeping it secret within secret cults. Now, that is the infiltration element. Publicly, they'll talk, you know, love and goodness and God. But privately, what they are doing is running this, you know, vicious cult of satanic rapists, which is the bottom line. And the American Conference of Catholic Bishops is just the public arm of what Father Malachy called Lucifer's Lodge.
Now, did you ever hear the story of why the confessional booths came to be?
Well, there are several things There are several stories that go about the origin of confession, but I'd like to hear what you heard.
Well, I heard that before they put up the confession booths, that the women were having such a hard time with the priest fondling them and sexually molesting them that they finally had to turn around and set up a booth where the women could be separated from the priest without.
Wow, that's a new version of the history of a confessional. I honestly hadn't heard of that one.
Yeah.
But
we'll check into it.
Oh, I will. But historically speaking, what I point out is that there were in Boston in 1832, there was a similar case in a convent here where some local Protestants actually burnt the convent down because women were escaping from it and saying that they were being raped by the priests.
Yeah.
You know, and there's all sorts of occult ceremonies there, and that's back in 1832. You know, really bizarre, bizarre stories of rape and abuse. Now, there again, I'm a Catholic myself, so I'm not Catholic bashing. I see a lot of merit in the church. One thing you have to remember about the Roman Catholic Church is it's the most globally expansive.